You're listening to Now You've Seen It, the podcast that endeavors to fill the holes in your essential movie viewing. Here's your host, Gregor Sprague.
Hello and welcome to Now You've Seen It, the show where we talk to people who haven't seen a movie and now they have. Joining me is, well, I am of course Gregor Sprague, the host this week. And joining me on the panel is Alice Lauren and Rob Goodman. How you guys doing?
Hey, I'm good. How are y'all? Pretending I'm from the South.
I'm well, Gregor. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. And joining me is very special guest, Chris Osborne from the Play Comics podcast. And he is our subject of joking fun, picking at because he hasn't seen the movie. I always preface this by saying this is not, when we say now you've seen it, it is not meant in a mean way. We all have gaps in our movie lexicon, watching experiences. His just happened to be past tense, this movie. But Chris, how are you doing, sir?
I'm pretty good.
All right. So we're going to get right down to some of the nitty gritty here. And, so this movie, My Neighbor Totoro, it's the movie we're talking about. It's a movie that they would have seen the title, My Neighbor Totoro. How did this pass you by? Like, what are you just not a big anime guy? Like, what's your excuse?
I definitely wasn't a big anime guy growing up. Like, my dad was in the Air Force, so moving around a lot, I'd never really had friends that were into it, despite having lots of different friends growing up. And so, like, I'm 30. How old am I? I'm 33. So it wasn't super accessible for me growing up. Like, of course, you had Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z and Dragon Ball and the super mainstream things like that.
I would say because you're right around my age. Yeah, you're right around my age. So you would have been at the tail end of like middle school, high school. Or no, like till in middle school, beginning of high school, where Yu-Gi-Oh and Pokemon and Digimon would have came out at that same time.
Yeah, so like Digimon and Yu-Gi-Oh especially were seen as super kid things. Pokemon, yeah. For me was, I mean, that was fine because the game was fun and nobody cared. Maybe I just got lucky with that one on where I lived.
Yeah.
But I never got into any of the movies because I never knew anybody who had any of the movies. So I didn't have anybody who could expose me to them at all.
No, fair enough. So I'm going to ask this because I've realized that I've had this lapse in the past with, I think right now I'm batting with all the shows that I've hosted. So far, I'm about 50-50 on movies that I've seen before and movies that I hadn't seen before. So, Rob and Alice, had you guys seen this before you got drafted to talk about this movie?
Nope. I just saw this today, a few hours ago, actually. It's kind of a hater of anime. I really don't like it. I think it's, no, not in a bad way, but like really nerdy. I really kind of strive to turn away from that nerdiness growing up. But a lot of my friends, people I've dated, have been super into anime. I'm a person who, I mean, I, you know, watched a little bit of Pokemon when I was younger. I play some of like the Pokemon video games and Pokemon Go now, as it's become, you know, cooler and more mainstream, because I'm totally not a hipster about nerd culture. But I'm a person who's like, no, Pokemon's not anime. No, you know. I think I've maybe seen, I think, Kiki's Delivery Service at some point, probably some summer camp or something. But, yeah. You know, I chose this anime summer camp. No, I chose this movie to talk about it because I kind of just wanted to know what was up. You know, why, you know, I mean, this is a very famous studio. Like the mascot of the studio. So I kind of was like, you know what, let me have some kinship with my friends and exes and see what this is about.
No, yeah, that's awesome. Rob, what about you? Had you seen this before?
No, somehow I missed My Neighbor Totoro as well, but I was excited to see it. I liked several other movies from Studio Ghibli. I like Princess Mononoke and Spirited Away, so I was excited to see My Neighbor.
Nice, nice. Okay, cool. So we are going to take a break and we will talk about the movie.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
After this ad.
Hey, come check out Small Town Mentality Podcast with your host Ben and
Austin.
We are on every Thursday morning
with tips on how to be a more efficient racist.
No, we don't do that.
Also, best ways to bag your sister in the sack.
No, I don't think we've ever talked about that.
Also, we do impressions.
We don't do that either. We do have some buttons that we push sometimes.
What? And black people.
Anyways, you can check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and everywhere you get a podcast.
You can find us closest to your nearing burning cross.
No, you can't. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at STM Podcast. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Two sisters. Their mother is really sick. They have to move to an old house in the country. The neighbor's grandson is a bit of a brat, and what lurks in the nearby forest? Trolls. But not like internet trolls who don't have a life. Real, tree-root living trolls. Trolls who have things to do, places to go, cat buses to ride. From Studio Ghibli, it's Miyazaki's My Neighbor Totoro, y'all.
And we are back, and of course we are talking about My Neighbor Totoro. To give some quick stuff that has been mentioned and may not have been. Just, you know, sort of mentioned again. My Neighbor Totoro was released in 1988 to make my friends here at Oracle Media Productions feel really old. That was the year before I was born. No, I do that with Sean, Brad Ludwig, and Corey Scott from the Galactic Netcast. They're always like, shut up, you young man.
Oh, my gosh.
But it was directed by Hayao Miyazaki. The production company is Studio Ghibli. Where did I see it? It had a budget estimated of around $3.7 million. But it has made, according to Wikipedia, $45.1 million. I feel like Dr. Evil after saying that. But yeah, so we're just going to sort of dive right into this. So Chris, as the guest, and we sort of have this whole range here of, I think the only person we're really missing is like the anime super fan, I would say, because I'm a fan of anime, but I wouldn't say I'm a super fan.
Because didn't you say before recording this is your second time seeing this?
Yes. Yeah. Because I'd seen it a couple years ago. And then I was like, and I was trying to find all of the Studio Ghibli movies to watch. And then I'm like, I'll wait. It was like I knew that they were going to become available on a streaming service that I probably would have in the future. Mm-hmm. Which is funny because this is like, I think 3 years before streaming services were really, really popular. But yeah, it was, you know, I've seen it a couple times. I respect it. You know, I enjoy the movie, and I'll talk more about it. But it's just, I think we have this whole thing of, like, with Chris, where I'm not gonna put words in his mouth, but it sounds like there's a respect for anime, but there just wasn't the opportunity because of, you know, living with, you know, being in a military family. Then, you know, we have you, Alice, where it's,
I'll watch it
because, you know, my significant, you know, my partner is watching it, sort of deal. And then we got Rob, who's a little bit more, and we got me, who's a little bit more. We're just missing that person here who's like, I live, eat, sleep, and breathe anime. But yeah, so Chris, let's dive in. What's your overall impression? of My Neighbor Totoro?
I really enjoyed it. I've enjoyed all the Studio Ghibli movies that I've seen. I mean, granted, it's been like Kiki's Delivery Service and Spirited Away and Grave of the Fireflies, because for some reason I started right at the Onion Factory. But I know, right? Yeah. But I really like this one, and I really like the whole little universe thing they have kind of building up in there, where, you know, nothing is necessarily super connected, at least not that I've picked up on, but you have a lot of stylistic connections and things. So, I mean, it's not like the movie is predictable, but it's familiar in a good way as I watch more and more of them.
Yeah. Rob, Alessandro, which one of you wants to go next? Just general overall impressions.
Yeah, I mean, it was cute. I mean, the animation was pretty good. I thought the little girls were adorable. I mean, they steal that show. Obviously, they steal the show. I mean, especially May. It was adorable. Their dad, I don't know if I had a crush on him or wanted a dad like him. I was joking that this movie should have been called like, and he doesn't care. Like, you know, it was obviously let them do whatever they wanted pretty much, but really indulge their imaginations. So, I mean, it was cute. It was a sweet movie.
Yeah. And Rob, go ahead.
I liked it. It was probably, though, my least favorite of the Studio Ghibli movies that I've seen. I definitely prefer Spirited Away. I thought it was interesting how there was very little plot to the movie, but it wasn't necessarily my favorite.
Yeah, and I get that, you know, because it's sort of how I thought about it. And I've remember seeing on YouTube, I think it was still when it was on Nerdist, it was still the Dan Cave, but they talked about one of the theories that that May's dead. It's like this fan theory, and where they're pulling from, it's so late in there. And I'm like, so you're basing this off of the what is essentially the third act, that she's died in here. No, this is, you know, when the cat bus comes in and does all that. And I'm like, that's interesting, especially to go off of the fact that it's the whole fan theory is based off of the third act.
Yeah,
well, in all of 20 minutes.
I mean, it's a tour through a child's imagination. I tried to just kind of obviously suspend disbelief and, you know, really, really take that journey with them. Obviously, with the mother's illness, it gives it a much sadder turn, and based on real events, actually, from he's the director, Miyazaki. Yeah.
Yes.
I didn't know if he was like producer or something, but yeah, from the director himself. And I thought the mom was gonna die. I thought that was gonna be like the big kind of gut punch of everything. So it was a very sweet ending as well.
No, yeah, definitely. Because that's one of the things I was going to mention is, you know, the fact that this is semi-autobiographical, from Miyazaki, where him and his brothers as children, their mother suffered from spinal tuberculosis and spent much of her time in the hospital. And, you know, it's sort of implied in the film that that's what the mother also suffers from. And it's one of the notes here on the IMDb page that he once said that the film would have been too painful for him to make if the two protagonists were boys instead of girls. Which I find really interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like the whole, you know, flipping them and, oh, how would this have been? I can believe it, you know, especially if you know, I know a lot of people who pull from their lives because that's what you know the most. And so it's, you know, especially with the fact that you're adding this in where it's taking place in rural Japan shortly after, I believe, World War II. And so that's where we get, you know, these... you know, with like the phones not being what we're used to, or, you know, it's more of the calling an operator and they're like, okay, I'll wait right here. And I'm sitting there thinking, but does he know where you're at?
Like, yeah, I sort of briefly forgot that there were phones. That I literally turned to my friend watching this and I was like, were there phones in the 80s? And he's like, yeah, there were phones for a long time. I was like, oh yeah, because I was like, obviously I don't have cell phones, but I think, you know, first of all, like a telegram, you know, why wouldn't they call? Why didn't they? I mean, obviously they didn't have a phone, but it was just kind of this like, wait, what the heck is going on? Because I'm also so zeroed in on, you know, how the Japanese culture is, obviously Japanese have phones, but the Japanese culture is different, and you can really see, you know, different elements throughout the film as well.
Oh yeah, definitely. With the bathing scene, you know, where the families bathe together. Like that's one of those things that a lot of people don't think about as they're, you know, like with here in the West. Like, no, it's very common for, you know, for the families to bathe together and to do, you know, to have like the, you know, the onsen where, you know, where it's like the spring water, you know, from, you know, how, you know, from their water source out there, just filling up the tub and them sitting there, you know, outside. It's like, all right, jump in.
I think of Japan as more conservative. Like I know, like I think of like European, you know, sexual or not, you know, nudity standards, you know, a bit more lax, but I would think with Japan, maybe that would be maybe different. Although obviously, you know, in a familial sense, yeah. I could see that as well. So.
Yeah, it's very much, you're right on both parts, because it is from what I understand of the culture, it is very, they are very conservative, but at the same time, you know, especially in this time when the film is taking place, but it's also very much the, you know, sort of like in, I believe it's Sweden or Finland, where, you know, everyone gets in a sauna, you know, there are more, I think I've heard a statistic where there's more saunas than there are people in Sweden. I could be, it's one of them Scandinavian countries. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you know, that's the thing that they do. And it's just like, all right, we're going there, going here, turn up the steam and, you know, sweat it out all the beer that we've drank the night, or, you know, just before.
It also might be a combination of elements here, because I don't think it would be so unusual in post-war rural America for at least, you know, family bathing is,
yeah,
it seems, you know, we're coming from a very metropolitan time in American standards, and it seems out there, but, you know, years ago in a rural area, I don't think it's that as outlandish as it comes off in 2020.
Yeah. And I mean, also the fact that you have May, just while her sister's at school learning, she's running around having her own adventures. Like you get that one scene where essentially she's jumped into her world and she just yells at her dad after you see her run, you know, from, you know, off camera left and then come back, you know, go all the way across. And she stops in the middle where she started and goes, "Dad, is it lunchtime?" And it's like, that was 30 seconds, girl. And he's just entertaining her. And he's like, "No, not yet. You just got out there." And he's, you know, sitting there grading his papers or whatever he's doing. It that part sets up so, for me, it sets up so much, because it's like, looking at it now, I could almost see like, oh, that dad's irresponsible. But I'm like,
yeah,
not really, because my mom did that with me when I was younger. You know, it was like, oh, you're, because she knew where I was at. She's like, oh, he's down at his friend's down the house or down the road or next door. You know, it's not like, you know, I'm pretty sure if we had a big woods like that it would be like, yeah, I'm in the woods all the time, you know, I'm gonna go climb a tree and fall off and probably break my arm or something. You know, something like that. Oh yes, trust me, if there was a Totoro or, you know, the smaller trolls there, yeah, I would have loved that.
Yeah, see you later, Mom. Never see you again.
Yeah, I just thought it was so funny when he was at the hospital and he's just, you know, has no idea. Nobody alerted him that his daughter might be missing. People are checking in like a pond. Like, no one, you know, he doesn't really know. And then he's like, oh, they might be in that tree. I don't know. You know, it was so funny and interesting to me.
No, yeah, definitely. So what worked best for you guys with this movie? Chris, we'll start with you.
I know there's some people that are going to kind of hate on this a little bit because of a lack of plot, but that is something I've really come to love about these. Not necessarily that I hate plot or anything, but it just, it doesn't seem like there's that super happy ending crammed onto the end of it for any reason. It's just, it's like how life is. Something just kind of stops and, you know, there's things that are going to go on and still happen in the future. You just don't happen to see them in this story.
Yeah, in the I'll agree with that, in the words part of it, but the like, because you watched the credits when they were singing the Totoro song, right?
Right.
With the stills.
Or at least I did the first time, because the first time I watched this was like a week or two ago, and then I watched it again earlier today, so I didn't watch that part again.
Because in there they do, it's sort of like the classic 80s American movie, you know, like. Where they would freeze frame on the actor, and Dan went on to discover the cure for cancer. They never heard from the squid again. You know, it's like one of those things. It's like that, but there's no words, and so they show that, you know, the mom eventually did get better, and you know, they all had fun and, you know, stuff like that. So there was the wrap up, but yeah, you're right, and I like that too. Because it's very much one of those slice of life. Here, you're experiencing this one time, you know, almost like an episode of, or episode or two of the Rugrats, where you're in here at this moment, you know, 12 minutes or 88 minutes later, you're out of the moment. Rob, what about you?
I think after I relaxed myself into the idea that there wasn't going to be a story and just accepted it as kind of ephemeral, kind of poetry through animation, I enjoyed some of the oddest parts. I really like that this studio has highly detailed backgrounds and then really flat character animation. So you kind of get a odd way of really focusing in on the characters because they look so different from the background. And I really enjoyed like the part where the girls and Totoro were playing ocarinas in the tree that sprouted overnight. Once I accepted that it wasn't like going to be a literal story and took some of the beautiful parts at face value, they became really enjoyable.
All right. And Alice, what about you? What worked best for you?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you both. The scenery, landscape was gorgeous. I mean, the lack of plot in a sense. I mean, you're really just following this fantasy, this beautiful journey, whether it's all in the girls' imaginations, just kind of like a theory that I have, or not. I mean, it doesn't really matter. You know, what's, you know, imagination and reality can be kind of, you know, close or not as close. But I think what was interesting was, and I had read that originally they wanted to have it be one female character, and then it was put into two characters with elements of the one character. And seeing the scene specifically where they found out that their mother wasn't doing well, and then you see the ways that each girl really grieves that. I mean, when I saw May just absolutely have a tantrum and start crying, I was like, that's me, I think, maybe. But also, possibly also like the other sister, you know, kind of, nope, I gotta buck up. I gotta, yeah, Satsuki, that's right. I have to, you know, buck up. I'm an only child, so I don't, you know, have that sisterly kind of connection with anyone. But it was so interesting to see how each girl really, really grieved that, and one became more of the adult and the other was like, nope, these are all of my emotions. I'm gonna be a 4-year-old about this.
Yeah, and I think that's where I really agree with that completely, because it's, you know, it's very much, I could see my niece, who is May's age, doing this. You know, if something were to, like, you know, if I were to say, oh yeah, I'll be over, you know, this weekend or whatever.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh no, I can't, I've got to go do this. I could see her going, but you promised.
Yeah. I kind of put my psych degree on this and kind of was like, well, how are these girls handling their sick mom? Is this dad, you know, acting this way? Although he was, I mean, the mom was pretty similar too, but is this dad acting this way, this sort of permissive, sweet, you know, kind of putting it all out there sort of way because of, you know, okay, you know, a sick mom, I have to really overcompensate.
No, definitely. And again, it's, you guys are bringing up all these things that it makes me, it changes my opinion of the movie, but I love this because as every one I've done, it's changed how I've thought about the movie. You know, even with, you know, and with a lot of these movies, it's like, you know, seeing it for the multiple, you know, multiple time. But yeah, so I'm assuming you both or everyone here has seen the 2006 dub. And for the anime fans who will be watching this, no, we are not going to get into the sub versus dub debate. I know that is a big debate, and I always tell people, because I have friends who are big anime, you know, listeners or watchers and stuff, and I've got people on both sides of the camp like, oh, dub all the way, sub all the way. And I'm like, I prefer dub, and especially if the voice cast is excellent. You know, especially with this one, forget who it was.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was Dakota Fanning and Elle Fanning.
Yep.
And I was like, do I not know their voices, although it's their little girl
This would have been, if I remember correctly, this would have been when Dakota, this would have been shortly after I Am Sam and after that Denzel Washington movie, what was it, Man on Fire, that she was in. That was like her big breakthrough movie. I'm looking right now. Yeah, Man on Fire. This would have been like, she would have been recording this right at that same time. So, I mean, she would have been about Satsuki's age, and the same thing with Elle Fanning, who's her younger sister. Mm-hmm. But I bring that up because of the fact that there's and I never noticed it until I'd seen the trivia part here on IMDb, where the 1993 Fox English version dropped a scene because it doesn't quite make sense in English. Mm-hmm. And it would have been, it's a scene where May is going Totoro, like, yeah. She's emphasizing, and it's because in English or in Japanese, Totoro is very similar to the word troll, which is Totoro. Probably butchering the pronunciation of both of those words, mm-hmm. And I apologize because I speak no Japanese. I speak as in no Japanese at all. But they did include the quote in the 2006 Disney English version. So I want to point that out there for people who didn't realize, you know, this as well. But yeah, I mean, I will say this because I think Rob mentioned the interconnectivity of it. Like, there wasn't really that much interconnectivity between other stuff. And I'm looking here at some of the other stuff, and it says that the soot creatures living in the house reappear in Spirited Away. That stuff I like more than like the direct you know, it's that more creative, almost like Pixar, where it's like, oh, here's the ball from Toy Story in Onward, or in that one dinosaur movie that I haven't seen.
Oh yeah, I think they had a Totoro in one of the Toy Story movies.
They had a Totoro in Toy Story 3. Mm-hmm. But you know, I always like that, like the little Easter eggy stuff. Like, oh, look, you see this. You know, like I know Spider-Man. I think it was Spider-Man 1, the first Tobey Maguire one, where they had it reflected in his eye lens thing. You saw the Twin Towers. Mm-hmm. You know, stuff like that. That's clever. But not the, oh, this is a part 3 of a 50 part epic that we're telling. And so here you've got to see all these other movies. No, we don't need none of that.
Yeah. My friend and I were trying to figure out, because those things that they referred to as acorns in the film, that maybe they didn't look like they were acorns. Maybe it was a bad translation. I don't know. Maybe they look more like hazelnuts or something. I don't know what they were. I mean, I guess it's, you know, it's fine. Whatever. I can pretend they're acorns, but.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I mean, it's one of those things I didn't think about until just now, like with you saying that. I was like, well, no, that's a great point. And I almost wonder if it's...
They look like shell casings. I'm like, okay.
There is the one shot where she opens her hands and she's got a whole handful of seeds. And it looked like there was multiple different kinds of seeds in her hand. So I wonder if they were trying to translate something that's roughly like tree seeds. But that doesn't sound very poetic in English, but maybe tree seeds is a one syllable word in Japanese. I don't know.
So is there anything that didn't work for you guys? Or was it the perfect movie?
I know. I mean,
there wasn't really anything that stood out to me. I mean, the first time I watched it, my wife still hadn't seen it. So she, you know, she's sitting there watching it with me. And then, like the wonderful person she is, the second time we watched it, she goes and tells me that she saw a theory on some YouTube videos. And she wouldn't tell me what it was. So I'm sitting there trying to guess. And of course, all my guesses are this person is really dead and that person's really dead. So I spent half the second time I was watching it trying to figure out, okay, which person is really supposed to be dead? Because I purposefully stayed away from any of that kind of stuff before I came out here. Mm-hmm. And then once she finally told me what it was, all right, so is she dead yet? Is she dead yet? Is this the part where they think she's dead?
That's reminded me of the IT crowd. Where all Roy wants to do is watch the, I think it was a Quentin Tarantino movie. It was like this fictionalized Quentin Tarantino movie. And then they're all like, oh, did you hear about the twist? Don't tell me there's a twist. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I would say, like, I know that I said, like, it was nice to be in that child's fantasy thing. But, you know, Totoro and the cat boss, like, isn't the whole movie. So I would say it kind of went a bit slowly. The pacing just wasn't right for me, I guess I would say, especially like when they first start moving into the house and they're all the soot gremlins. And I mean, so in a sense there was kind of like a, this is kind of boring sort of sense.
No, fair enough. I mean, it is, especially from what I remembered from when I had first seen it years ago, and even thinking about it now, because I'd seen it for the show last week, and then I'm like, oh, and then I was like, okay, cool, I gotta record on Friday, and then something came up, you know, it doesn't matter what it is, and I'm like, oh, okay, here, I'll try to figure out what all I'm gonna do, and I'm like, but it's like, yeah, I didn't remember, like, I remembered all the scenes, but it didn't seem like it was so long.
Yeah,
for the first act.
And the soot gremlins what did they even do with that? Like, you know, they had nothing to do with anything. They were just, I guess, the first creatures that were seen, and then it just becomes more interesting, you know, ghosts and then creatures that you see after. I don't know.
I mean, they're a not scary way to introduce the idea that the girls can see these magical creatures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, your other option would have been jumping straight to Totoro.
Right. And then, yeah, it's like, is this a supernatural town or is it not? Yeah.
Or Granny just saying, hey, did you girls know you could see things that not everybody can see?
And I also thought, like, is she like some kind of evil magic? Not evil, but like magic granny. Yeah, she might be. If she was seeing them when she was little.
No, man, fair enough. So what do you guys think of the acting performances? Like we mentioned there, Alice, like you mentioned before, this was, you know, with this version that we had, it was Dakota Fanning and Elle Fanning. Mm-hmm. And this was Elle Fanning's first animated movie that she had done. So what do you think of the performances overall? Which I realize is such a tricky question to ask when you're talking about an animated film.
Well, I was gonna say Elle Fanning. I mean both girls, but I mean especially Elle Fanning just killed it. Maybe she was acting like herself, you know, I don't know. But I mean, these are two white girls playing two Japanese girls. So maybe there were some differences there, although it was interesting. Not that I want to either whitewash or Americanize this movie, but I could see it being like a live action movie with, I don't know, I guess Dakota Fanning and Elle Fanning, although they're too old now, but so whatever young actresses today. I think the dad, that was a weird performance for the dad. His dialogue came off a little weird. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the adults had some interesting dialogue. The grandmother was good, though.
Yeah.
Like the adults kind of seemed more stilted, kind of what I would expect of, like, anime, like Pokemon or something. Although I guess everyone sounds stilted in Pokemon. But
that's a great point, because it's
I think pattern-wise.
Yeah, I think it's a thing that happens with all animation, or a lot of animation, when the kids are the focus. I go back to Rugrats, and it's like, okay, you know, grandpa had a sleeping disorder. You know, it's like every time that grandpa had to watch the kids, you know, Dee Dee and I'm like Stu leave, and grandpa's there, and it's like, dude, they just left. I mean, you can't. You think there'd be a subset of before of him going, I got the whippersnappers. No, it's boom, ow. I mean, you know, even earlier, you know, Charlie Brown, you know, all the adults, it's that womp, 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 womp. You know, they don't ever have actually any dialogue. So, yeah,
wasn't the rule that adults usually voice children? Because then you get something like Charlie Brown, where you get kids and they're like, I don't know how to act. I don't know how to.
Well, it's tricky. So with that in animation, it depends. Because for movies, a lot of times they'll use kids. So the one I think of is there's a girl. There was a girl who was the age of Boo in Monsters,
yeah,
Inc.
Yeah.
And then actually there was
the little girl in South Park, I think.
Yeah, like little girl in South Park. But then you get like Rugrats or The Simpsons, yeah, where the kids were all voiced by adults.
I mean, they couldn't be babies in Rugrats, can you imagine?
Yeah, but I mean, then again, yeah, it's but it's you then could go like the Steven Universe route, where you have a kid that is this age voicing the kid, or The Amazing World of Gumball, you know, two shows that are on Cartoon Network right now, where they've recast as the kids have gotten older, mm-hmm, and, you know, their voices have changed. Where, yeah, if you go adults playing younger, especially for, yeah, an animated movie, because you don't need to see their faces. The artists might use that for references if they say a word very particularly, mm-hmm, you know, they might use that and be like, oh yeah, we want to throw in his eye twitch or whatever when he says darn nabbit, mm-hmm, you know, or whatever the thing might be.
But this movie would make a bad example for that, because by the time they got to the Fannings, this movie had already been completely animated. So, yep, they're rewriting the script so that the English words kind of line up with pre-animated mouths.
That's true.
Opposed to what you... So really, this, in that way, would have made the most sense to have adults. Although, yeah, although this is a very childish movie, so you don't really need... and might be harmed by a adult sensibility. Yeah. Trying to act like children when you're an adult, that comes with a lot of baggage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you guys think of the music? This is the last part before we do the concluding up that I'm going to hit here. But the music in there, I personally had to fast forward through the end song, because even now while talking about it, the that song is stuck in my head, and it's like, oh no.
I remember it now, but I did. Yeah, it was a adorable end song. I don't remember any of the music during the movie, though. I don't think. I just, as soon as you said that, I'm like, well, was there a score? I have no recollection.
I mean, I'm right there with you on that. I don't remember it standing out in a bad way, which I guess is good, because it's not like it ruined anything. But I'm not going to hear a song from this except for those opening credits and say, oh, this is from My Neighbor Totoro.
And I guess that's a good thing, though, that, you know, if it's...
I don't know if I'd go all the way to good, but it's not a bad thing.
Well, I mean, that...
It's just kind of a thing.
Well, yeah, but I mean, a good score for a movie, or at least in my opinion, it shouldn't take away from the movie. You know, if they're... like, to give an example, when they... I don't remember if they did it in the movie or if it was just in the trailer, but for Suicide Squad, when they played Spirit in the Sky, I'm like, that's lazy song choice thing there. I mean, you know, yeah, okay, yes, they're flying. So, oh, let's play Spirit in the Sky. Mainly because I Believe I Can Fly by R. Kelly might be a little too not right for this situation. Yeah. But yet, Spirit in the Sky worked in Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, so I mean, it's one of those things, like, it, like, a good score can help, but there wasn't too much with it. Like, the only on the IMDb, the soundtrack credits, there's only the two songs, but I want to say that they used, like, and I'll say this, like, more like the Foley work, like the sound effects, all of it seemed to work. There wasn't ever any jarring thing for me.
And that might all be good scoring, but I think that to say something's a great score, wouldn't you wind up with, you know, the Imperial mark for Totoro?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I've never seen Jaws, but I know, like, the Jaws theme, and I use, like, everyone in quarantine, I use TikTok, and I jokingly put, like, the Jaws theme under, like, a squirrel eating a nut or something, and it made everything seem so much more intense, you know, even though it was just a squirrel. But, I mean, great score, great music. I mean, it's in the name. I got underscores. It makes you feel.
Y'all are hitting it right here. You know.
And I feel very nervous for that squirrel when you put some interesting, you know, some music under it. So.
Oh yeah. And it's, I mean, I don't disagree with you at all. The other thing we'll add in there is with the dad. It was Tim Daly was the actor for the 2005-2006 Disney version, as it is called, who was the voice of Superman in Superman the Animated Series.
There we go.
Just throwing that out there, because I'm like, oh, hey, Professor Kusakabe sure was super. Ha ha ha. And I also mentioned that because I've been watching Batman the Animated Series a lot while in lockdown. Well, when I am in lockdown, since I'm an essential worker. But this isn't a show about that.
I know.
This is a show that, if we're still in this, will be an escape, hopefully. So, wrapping up with your overall impressions, what do you guys, like, I know I sort of hit it at the beginning, but actually, no, hold on, save that, scratch that, forget whatever, all this stuff I just said, because it's sort of going to be redundant. And we're going to take a break, gather ourselves, and be right back.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy. Woo! And sadness. Oh. And anger. Definitely some disgust. Rose. And I think a little fear. Really? But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Norway reeling from twin attacks. First, a suspected car bomb.
Thomas Quick was known as Sweden's worst serial killer. Quick was convicted.
Kim Wall disappeared after boarding Madsen's submarine in Copenhagen Harbour last August.
Terrorism, miscarriages of justice, serial killers, disappearances. From the known to the lesser known, we give you true crime from the dark and frozen regions of Northern Europe. This is Nordic true crime. Subscribe to our bi-weekly episodes on iTunes, Spotify, or on your podcast provider. And find us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Nordic True Crime.
All right, and we are back, and we're going to do a fun little thing before we rate our movie from $0 to $10 as to how much you would pay if it was available in theaters right now. And we're going to cast the redubbing of this. Because to do a remake,
I wouldn't
want to touch this unless Hayao Miyazaki was doing it.
Right, I feel like it would be horrible. Like, I mean, controversial, you know, because, I mean, seeing this, like, I saw it dubbed, and I almost, like, I couldn't see how, I couldn't imagine it in Japanese, weirdly enough. So that's why it was, like, easier for me to think about, like, oh, if we could just completely, you know, whitewash, Americanize, you know, whatever you want to say, and have like a live action movie. Cause I could see, like, I mean, the story is it's a universal story. Mm-hmm. Now there are some Japanese elements that, you know, have to be right there. You know, you can't really take them with you. And it would be horrible if you change those. So I don't know. I'm trying to think of it either in redubbing or I guess in a controversial live action American film.
Oh, no, we're not going to go that way. This is strictly just going to be the animated. Okay. Because, I mean, we've sort of seen how that worked out for Ghost in the Shell, which I really enjoy the movie. But it's like, you know, I get where everyone's coming from. So it's like, okay, fine.
Yeah.
We're going to sort of, and we don't have to do everyone, but I figure, you know, the daughters, Sasuke and Mei, the dad. The mom, maybe grandma, Kanta, if you want to go crazy, who was the boy that I couldn't tell if he had a crush on Sasuke.
Yeah, I was not a big fan of him. I was like, what the heck?
Yeah, it was.
I loved him. That's how a little boy that age is going to act.
Yeah, and that's where I was like, yeah. I'm like, is he crushing or is he like me and just awkward?
Yeah. That people aren't like doing favors for each other, but like all of the like giving the umbrella to, you know, to someone else. And it just felt like beyond that, like a very, you know, if we can get together as a group versus like kind of being individual in their intentions.
Yeah.
I think that your real clue to the fact that Kanta has a crush is that the way he reacts to his mom finding out about the umbrella and the subtle kind of wink that the mom gives when Shotsky returns the umbrella.
Yeah.
Seems like the mom knows there's something going on there. And that's why he runs and hides.
Yeah. Which I found hilarious, which is because that's right after him. For some reason, in my head, I'm picturing him just like looking mad while he's like, here, take the umbrella, and runs. So I'm actually going to go, I'm going to try to get things rolling here with casting the dad.
See, the first name that popped up for me to voice the dad was Will Friedle.
Ooh, yes. That's a good one. Yeah.
I think he could play off that kind of playing along with the girls, but also making sure he's getting his work done vibe the dad's got going on really well. And you have an experienced voice actor, so he can kind of hurt the cats of everybody else, no matter who everybody else picks.
Man, that's a good pick. I'm trying to think. Yeah, now I kind of want to go down the rabbit hole of experienced voice actors. Let me think.
Well, I mean, if we're going that route, if we're going like with the experienced voice actors, I mean, Tara Strong would have to be in there. I mean, she voiced Dill Pickles in Rugrats. She voiced Raven in Teen Titans and Teen Titans Go.
Yeah.
I think she was Buttercup in the original Powerpuff Girls.
Yeah, but I don't know if I'd want to see her playing little girls. Like, I think I would want to give young girls that chance. Yeah. Like, I love her, though. I don't have to, like...
So, I'm going to pick one here, and it's sort of... I think she might be a little too old to play Mei. But I mean, I could see her sort of as either one, depending on how we go. Because I'm sort of leaning for May. It would probably be a completely unknown person.
Yeah.
But I don't know if any of you have seen the TV show Outmatched on Fox.
No, I don't think so.
It stars Jason Biggs.
And
Maggie Lawson. But they have the youngest daughter on there. Her character's name is Layla, but the actress's name is Oakley Bull. I could see her playing either the older, the Satsuki role, and then getting the completely unknown. But with how her voice, with how she, you know, acts, especially on Outmatched, I could see her playing the May role and getting, you know, someone else to play Satsuki. So I could see her going either way because she's, I mean, right around 10-11. So I mean, it would work perfectly fine. For the mother, I would honestly probably say, if we want to go the strong role, voice actor role, I would probably put Tara Strong in that.
Yeah, maybe, but then I thought she'd be kind of underutilized.
True. But hey, I'm casting it, so I can pick who I want.
I know. I'm just giving some feedback. I want to stick Tara Strong in there in any means necessary. She can play the dad. I'm gonna say from Despicable Me, there's all the little girls, like Miranda Cosgrove. I know she's older, but she still was able to play a young girl in that.
I could see Miranda Cosgrove doing Satsuki.
Yeah. Ozzie Fisher. I was thinking even for Satsuki, I'm trying to remember what it was. Oh, was it Hotel Transylvania? Selena Gomez, I could see a Satsuki as well. Yeah,
that'd be pretty good.
But yeah, Elsie Fisher was in Despicable Me. I don't know how I felt about the movie that she was just in, but maybe not just in. Oh my gosh, years have gone by. But who is the girl who was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood? Is it Julia Butters? Her name. I'm making up names now. She just seemed like a very talented actress. And she's young. Julia Butters, I think.
I would have had to have seen Once Upon a Time.
It was not good. But she deserves the hype.
She had the big scene against Leonardo.
Yeah.
Where they're talking about being actors.
Yeah.
Good pick.
She's 10, yeah.
All right, is there anyone else that you guys can think of, or?
I mean, obviously, we're leaving Frank Welker as Totoro and all the various animal noises, right?
Tara Strong is Totoro. Totoro Strong.
I was trying to think about that. Yes, we could leave Frank Welker, or I was trying to remember who, and I can't think of what he played in any of the things that I've heard him in. But there's there's three voice actors that I can think of that I always recognize them when I hear them. Tara Strong is one of them.
E.J. Daly, I think it was Tommy Pickles.
It wasn't E.J. Daly that I was thinking of. It was a guy, it was D. Bradley Baker.
Oh, yeah.
That I was thinking of, yeah, it was D. Bradley Baker. And there's another guy that he's worked with a lot that I could see them doing some of these because they've done, you know, they'll do all sorts of roles.
That D. Bradley Baker made me think of American Dad, which made me think of Seth MacFarlane for the dad. That would be interesting. I could see that.
Yeah, I know that would. Or I'm just going to throw it out there for the dad, J.K. Simmons.
Okay, well, maybe. I was going to say maybe too old. I'm trying to remember J.K. Simmons' voice.
It might be too intense.
Yeah.
Have you seen Legend of Korra? He can pull it back.
Okay.
I mean, it's not like there are times in the, and I mentioned that because D. Bradley Baker was on Legend of Korra with him. That's what got me to it. But it's one of those that, you know, with him, like, especially in the role that he plays in there, it's not the J. Jonah Jameson or the whatever his name was in Whiplash, where it's like the roar. It's very subdued.
Well, I'm thinking about him like in his insurance commercials.
Yes.
But if we had either him or if we had Seth MacFarlane, we could have his friend Charlize Theron is the mom, maybe.
Yeah. Another one I was thinking of that would be really good would be Steve Blum, who's done a lot of voice acting.
I don't know that name.
And a lot of anime stuff. Where, what one would be?
I call it Cowboy Bebop. Cowboy Bebop, that's what I'm going to call it. I don't think that's how you say it.
Cowboy Bebop, yeah. That's the one that he's... that's where I first heard of him, was through Cowboy Bebop and Big O. You know, when I first got into anime, like, he was in all those. You know, now that I'm looking back, I'm like, oh, that's the guy that was from here.
I've been hearing about, what the heck? Oh, okay. I don't know how to say his name. Vic Magnolia?
Vic Magnolia.
Yeah. Vic something. Vic M. I've heard that name recently. Just throwing out names. I know someone just recently met him at a convention, one of my friends.
When I had seen that in something on one of the Wikipedia pages, that's where I quickly was able to pick it up. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what, though.
Who else have to cast? Granny. Granny should be played by... Oh, I wish I had her name in my head. Cicely Tyson. Mark Hamill. I was going to say, like, a really old lady, like Cicely Tyson. Betty White will be an old lady. Granny.
See, that's one of those... If you did Betty White in that, mm-hmm. like, I like it, but it's... For me, it sort of screams... if you guys have seen Fight Club, Jared Leto has the main opening sequence billing. Yeah, he's in like three scenes, and it would sort of fall along that same route. Like if we had, I'm already blanking on who we had cast as the dad. Will Friedle, and then we had like Tara Strong to be the mom. It's like, well, she's such a great voice actress. Yeah, she's only got like four lines.
Might as well do a Kim Possible reunion, have like Christy Carlson Romano.
That's
a great thing. No, that's an awesome thing.
We should do
a Boy Meets World reunion and have it be
Daniel Fishel.
Yep, there you go.
Everyone in it is gonna be from Boy Meets World. I don't know any of the actually, you know what I was gonna say from Girl Meets World, Rowan Blanchard. Because I could see it.
Yeah. Yeah, Rowan Blanchard would do it. Would be good in the Satsuki role.
Mm-hmm. And then Sabrina Carpenter acting like a child? I don't know. I guess I could see it. We're going to go full Boy Meets World on this.
Well, if you want to go that route. Boy Meets Totoro. if you want to go that route, there's... And I don't know her name, but there's the girl who played... the little annoying kid that would come in that was Augie's girlfriend, wife, whatever.
Oh, I thought you were.
You know, you could do her, but I think she's... I also think she's aged up too much to where she wouldn't have that voice.
No, I thought you were talking about Morgan from World. I'm like, what?
which one?
All aged. Oh yeah, which Morgan? The youngest Morgan we can find.
All right, so I think I'm going to call that part because I lost who we have for what and what we still need to cast.
cast everybody for every role.
Everyone for every role. Will Friedle plays everyone.
Do you know how amazing that would be, though?
Tara Strong could play everyone. I bet she could do it.
That would also be amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm going to put out two just special because I love these guys as people. For two smaller roles like Conta's father, or I'm trying to find another male role, but doing Taika Waititi and Richard Ayoade, in there. So Moss from the IT Crowd, or
I just thought of it as like a joke casting because I was just watching this show. Guy Fieri as the dad. I'm just watching Diners and Drive-Ins, so I was like, all right, throw him in.
Dad, is it lunchtime? Not yet. I haven't got the 50 pounds of burgers.
Welcome to Flavor Town, mate.
Flavor Town is currently closed. I don't know, I've not seen Guy Fieri in a long time in any of his stuff, so I'm like, yeah. Pass.
Oh my God. Manic energy.
We can get all these people to say one line as the little kids hanging out the window and yelling at the school, and then top bill them all, stump casting all the way.
That's it. Nice. So the last thing we're going to do before we close here is we're going to rate the movie with the $0 to $10 scale. This would be, and I'm going to preface this and get mine out of the way, all the one I do. This is definitely a watch for me. I'm the one who brought this up, the whole like dollar scale, but I always bring it up. I always do it more in the, would I have seen it in theaters, you know, opening weekend, or, you know, like later on in the late run, or like where I would have watched it, or like to have watched it in this case, since it's an older movie. For me, I would have seen this in the theaters. So for I'm gonna wait on my dollar amount. I'm still trying to fine tune where it would be. Mm-hmm. But Chris, what would you rate this? You know, from $0 to $10.
I do have to preface this by saying we have a Cinemark bias, so our movies are like $5.
So fair enough.
My baseline for things is already really thrown off from probably the rest of the country. But like. Easily the 7 or 8 range.
Okay. So 7.5?
Sure. I don't know how much y'all want like to eliminate those.
Oh no, you're good. We can go. I mean, so far it's been 0.5. We haven't had anyone go, I would pay $8.92. We haven't had anyone do that. So
I know. I think my first podcast here where I was talking about like how much I would pay and like I'm cheap, but you can't think of it like in what you as like a cheapskate would pay, because I was like 50 cents. Even if I love the movie, I want to see it for free, you know.
Which is,
but I would fair. Definitely go in and get that like kind of maybe 3D viewing of it or something. I don't know what kind of 3D stuff they really could have had in this besides when they were flying around, but if they had a way to pull it off, I would go see it that way.
The dust bunnies in the beginning. The
scene. Yeah, that was one of the best animations they had, yeah.
All right, so Alice, ignoring your cheapiness.
Ignoring my cheapiness.
What would you rate this?
Yeah, reading it.
This is where I think I've gone more to saying to rating it because of that fact, you know, like,
yeah,
like where I am cheap as like
how
well.
How many stars? Yeah.
Yeah.
How many stars you give it? Man, I mean, I don't think I would want to see this again. I mean, I respect its legacy. I think the animation was nice. It was a sweet story. It was cute. Oh man, I just, you know what, my mind is still landing on 6. I would say 6.
Okay. Rob, what would you?
I think before we started this conversation, I was leaning towards 6 too. But I think after we've all talked, I feel like I've recognized some more
the errors in your ways.
So I'm going to go $7.
I say that, of course, joking, but no, I'm close to you guys. I think I'm the more higher end of this, where I am the my rating. I would say it's about an 8, because I do enjoy the movie. And even taking aside the fact that I am an anime fan, there is part of me that's hoping that I am not going to be cast as the anime guy when movies come out, because or when the choices for the movies come in here, because it's like, let's have everyone have a turn here in the host pool of watching an anime. I mean, let's not shove Gregor into that pile. But yeah, I mean, I'm gonna do an 8, and then doing all my scientific maths. That's opening up the calculator app. We get a rating of 7.12, or 7.13 if you round up, because it went 125, and if you want to round up to the next penny, for the total there of in the monetary monies spent, which is about on par with the movies that I've reviewed. In all honesty, I think V for Vendetta was the lowest one at 575 British pounds, which translates, I think even then, like translating, if you convert it to the American dollar, I think it still roughly was at that point when we recorded. But, and that's a whole other episode or episodes, honestly. I mean, you can go back and listen to all those. Closing remarks. I'm going to start things off simply. Chris, for one, thank you for being on here. And where can people find you in the things that you do on the internet?
Well, I have a show called Play Comics, where I look at video games based on a comic property and how well they stick to that source material. I use comic really loosely. So if it was like drawn with pictures and word bubbles and you can read it, then it's a comic, whether that's, you know, a manga or newspaper strips or, you know, what we traditionally think of as comic books, then I'll get it covered. So I grab a guest for each episode on those, and we just take a look at the comic history side of things, and then we take a look at the game and, you know, just discuss what they got right, what they got wrong, what stuff, you know, they technically got wrong, but it's a video game, so you can't have Superman just blasting his way through everybody because that's no fun.
But man, this movie should have been a game. I'm just like imagining that now.
But you mean, so it's wrong that whenever I play Lego or Lego DC Superheroes or Lego Batman 3, that when I always jump to Superman because he's invincible, that I shouldn't be doing that?
Honestly, that's one of the things I like to get people to talk about in there, because there are things you just have to switch up because it's a game, and you just have to kind of accept that something is going to be screwed up. Like, you get some of these fighters like Justice League Task Force or Marvel versus Capcom series, and yeah, there's no way you could have little tiny character beat up a Sentinel all by themselves, but you have to balance it out for the game.
Oh yeah, definitely. And that reminded me of the best one, because like, it seems like the Lego franchises for both Marvel and DC had that quote unquote invincible character. And it was funny because on the Marvel side, it was Wolverine and it was Stan Lee, at least for one of them, because Stan Lee had a lot of the powers that the other characters that he created had, even though I don't think he created Wolverine. But he had the claws. It was funny. But that's a whole other show. Alice, where can people find you?
Yeah, so I've watched some other movies recently with a commentary track on the Cosmic Geppetto podcast. So if you guys like Endgame, I will commentary track on that. What's it called? Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 commentary track. Should be out pretty soon. I am on the Greetings from Wonderfalls podcast that should be coming out sometime this year about the 2004 comedy Wonderfalls. We go episode by episode there. I'm on other shows on this Now You've Seen It podcast, so definitely listen to some of my interesting hot takes. And you can find me on Twitter at Ali Mez, A-L-I-M-E-Z-H, Facebook Alice Lauren, and my TikTok is Podcast Socialite.
And Rob, where can people find you?
Well, I'm the host of the Nuclear Heat Wrestling Podcast, and you can always catch up with me on all the social media at RobTheGeek42.
Rob, me and you're going to have some major words after this.
Yeah, same. I'd like to talk.
I've been Gregor. You can find me on the socials, either that Gregor or Gregor 1942. And you can find me, hopefully in the near future, on a show that Chris guested with me on years ago called The Elsners over at Galactic Netcast. Elsners.com or Galactic Netcast will have a plug here at the end. But that wraps it up here for us. And again, I said this at the beginning, I will say this at the end, just because the show, you know, our show is called Now You've Seen It, where, you know, we say this in fun. We talked about, you know, it, with all of our guests, you know, we say these things not out of spite, not out of anger or disgust, but we understand we all have these glaring omissions that are out there. So be kind to people, especially in these crazy times. Subscribe, rate, review. That's how you can be nice to us. That's how you can be kind to us. You can email us at oraclepodcasts@gmail.com. If you want to be on here or if you want to suggest a movie, we're open to all of it. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/nowyouveseenit. Support us on our Patreon at patreon.com/oraclepodcasts. You can check out this and other wonderful podcasts at oraclepodcast.com. Our opening theme was performed by Eric Hunt. I have to do that every time. The voiceover work was performed by the wonderful voice of Steve. You can check him out for all of your voiceover needs at thevoiceofstevevo.com. And we want to thank our broadcasting partners over at Age of Radio, Galactic Netcasts, and the Art, Comedy, and Pop Culture Network. You can find out more about them at ageofradio.org, gncasts.com, that's gncasts.com, and acpnet.net. And the final thing to be said is, bye.
Now You've Seen It is a production of Oracle Media Productions in association with Age of Radio and Galactic Netcasts. For more great podcasts, visit oraclepodcasts.com, ageofradio.org, and gncasts.com.